Good evening, everyone. I'm Jim Rothney, your host once again for this evening, and welcome to Immunitech's Medline conference call. This call is for the education of Immunitech distributors. As a brief introduction, Immunitech is a nutritional biotechnology company. They're located close to Montreal, Canada, with a very, very unique line of nutritional products. Their flagship product is called Immunical, and it is the category-defining product for raising the immune system through raising a very special substance in your body called glutathione. Immunical has well over a quarter of a century of research and a long list of publications in the medical and scientific literature. There are multiple method of use patents from the United States and Canada and many more from around the world. Immunical is also one of the very few over-the-counter products included in the U.S. Physician's Desk Reference, that's the PDR, and the Pharmacist Red Book. And that reference and those reference materials are in the hands of every practicing physician and pharmacist in North America. In addition, Immunical has been successful in Canada in obtaining what's known as an NPN number, and that is a natural product certification that justifies the medical claim that Immunical is beneficial for a good immune system. Joining us again tonight is Dr. Jimmy Gutman, a board-certified emergency physician who has spent many, many long hours of research and time over the years learning as much about glutathione as possible. He's authored many books on the topic now in five different languages, with the latest best-selling edition, Glutathione, Your Key to Health. Dr. Gutman is the senior medical consultant at Immunitech and continues his research to better understand the critical role that this miraculous substance plays within our bodies. With all the research that's out there, I doubt that he will ever run out of material. Welcome to our call, Dr. Gutman.
Thank you very much, Jim.
Okay, Dr. Gutman, before we get onto the topic for tonight, which is the flu that's making so many headlines, could you give us a very brief introduction on glutathione?
Well, glutathione is a word that's becoming more and more familiar out there. At one point in time, nobody's heard of glutathione, but so many have now because of the huge avalanche of research that is being done on this. And people want to know what glutathione is. It's a natural little molecule that exists in all of your cells. The problem is that keeping your glutathione levels up is not that easy. And glutathione plays so many important roles, but we can summarize the roles of glutathione using the acronym glutathione, what an idea. What an idea. The AN stands for antioxidant. Glutathione is known as the master antioxidant. It's the antioxidant your body makes, and it's the antioxidant that all the other antioxidants depend on for the proper function. IDEA, first letter I, stands for the immune system. Glutathione, without glutathione, your immune system would be essentially crippled. You need high glutathione levels to continue a good immune response. D stands for detoxification. The highest levels of glutathione to be found in your body is, after all, in your liver, which is your body's major organ of detoxification. E stands for energy. And Jim, you and I will have a call soon just talking about glutathione and energy. And there's so much to be addressed here, everything from the molecular level to the performance of professional athletes. And finally, A, anti-aging. When you look at anti-aging medicine, we've come a long way in the last half dozen years, and glutathione is right at the cutting edge of anti-aging medicine. So, glutathione, what an idea. If you remember those few little letters and the roles that glutathione played, then you probably understand about 95% of the roles of glutathione.
Excellent summary and introduction. And also for all of you new people and new listeners out there, Immunical is the only natural protein that's patented and clinically proven to raise glutathione. Okay, now on to tonight's topic, and this, as I said earlier, is something that's been in every newscast for the past few weeks and stirring up a lot of anxiety across the globe, the flu, or what is known medically as influenza. And Dr. Gutman, I'm sure you've been getting a lot of questions about the flu these past couple of weeks.
Oh, man, you have no idea. You know, questions about how to avoid the flu, how to treat the flu, what about Tamiflu and these other drugs? And, of course, you know, what about glutathione? What role does glutathione play in the flu? And finally, about this swine flu, or more accurately, H1N1, you know, what's the scoop over here?
Well, Dr. Gutman, I think that's a fair place to start. What is the flu, and what is the swine flu, and how do these two differ?
Well, when people talk about the flu, they should be referring to the influenza virus, usually influenza A. It's a relatively common virus that makes its rounds mostly each winter season, although, as you see now, it can take place at any time during the year. Usually appears pretty similar to the common cold, with aches and pains and runny nose and a dry cough and sore throat, except these symptoms tend to be more severe. What will tip a doctor off that a patient has a flu rather than a cold is the presence of a pretty good fever, you know, a bad headache and really sore muscles, and a patient usually feels pretty wiped out. Now, the severity of this flu, every season it varies, and it depends on the particular strain of influenza that's shown up that year.
Well, you mean then it's actually a different virus every year. Is that why we don't develop an immunity to it like we do other viruses, such as measles or chickenpox?
Exactly, Jim. This virus is constantly mutating to develop resistance against our immune systems, and we're constantly trying to figure out the latest mutations. And not only are they constantly mutating, Jim, but they often jump from species to species, so it's even harder to follow.
Okay, but then from species to species, so that explains why we often refer to strains of the flu, such as swine flu or bird flu. What about this particular swine flu that's stirring up so much consternation today? It can't be the first time that humans have caught a flu bug from animals.
We've probably been sharing influenza viruses with animals for literally thousands of years. It's just when the bug jumps species, you can never predict how severe or deadly the virus is going to be. In the case, you remember not that long back ago, the avian flu, we got some good indications that it was pretty nasty. In this case with the swine flu, or better called H1N1, it appears so far to be pretty mild. It lasts about a week or so, but you know, we're still early on and we're still gaining experience with this new H1N1 swine flu.
Okay, but there have been a number of deaths in Mexico.
Yeah, but so far, among the hundreds of cases reported worldwide and probably thousands of cases which haven't been documented outside of Mexico, people have been doing pretty well. But please remember that even a run-of-the-mill flu that we see every year, that we're all familiar with, actually kills thousands of people every year.
Okay, then the question begs, why just individuals in Mexico?
Well, there are a number of theories. I don't think scientists still have come up with any sort of consensus, but we may see something in the next few weeks or months.
And well, Dr. Gutman, then the question remains, are we all going to see a worldwide epidemic or pandemic, as the term is used, of the swine flu? And is it going to kill millions of people, as some of the people in the media have suggested?
Jim, you know, we're not really in a position to answer. You know, some people are fearful, but I'd have to say most people feel that this has been very much a media party and that it's been overhyped. But the point of this call is to talk about what are the best things to do in case of the flu, whether it's H1N1 or any other flu. Of course, we're going to stick what we're expert on, and that's the immune system.
That sounds pretty good, Doc. All right, well, let's then, how about informing everyone on how to prevent the flu?
Well, you know, do you really need me to do that? You know, all you got to do is listen to your mother.
You know, I don't want to be disrespectful, Dr. Gutman, but I'm not quite convinced that she'd get as many listeners as you would, so you might want to explain this a bit.
Okay, well, this is what your mom would probably tell you. Number one, cover your mouth. You know, nasal, oral, and lung secretions can contain literally millions of viruses. You know, you sneeze into a room and you spread out this wonderful, invisible curtain of viral smog. You know, this is perfect as, if your intention is to open up more parking spots in the parking lot downstairs. But don't do it. If you're sick, stay at home. Have some consideration for your coworkers or classmates. Sneeze or cough into your elbow or into a tissue. You know, this thing about carrying hankies, that carries the virus around everywhere. And guess what? Really, the number one rule is wash your hands. The other thing we need to look at is clean up. You know, desks and handrails and pens and telephones and light switches. These are all what we call vectors, a means of transportation that a virus can hop onto and get to the next poor, unsuspecting victim. You know, a flu virus can survive probably for over an hour on these surfaces if you're not washed off appropriately. And then, after you wash them, wash your hands. Don't pick your nose. I know that sounds a little bit obscene, but on average, we've done studies on this, people will touch their face between 6 and 12 times every minute. Now, bringing your hand to your face, it gives the virus a chance to be introduced to your nose, your mouth, your eyes. You know, it's a perfect surface for the flu to get into your bloodstream. And if you absolutely have to scratch your nose, wash your hands. And finally, don't go out without a hat. Just kidding. Mom was actually wrong here. You don't catch a cold or a flu from a draft. You get it from a contaminated doorknob or an escalator handle or elevator button or banking machine. And again, that always takes us back to rule number one, wash your hands a lot.
All right. But beyond mother's advice then, what's the best way to prevent the flu? What about the flu shot or vaccine? My understanding is that the vaccine is pretty much ineffective against protecting us from the swine flu.
Well, you're partly right. We're not really sure, but this year's flu vaccine was developed to protect us from a strain that's different from the H1N1 strain, and it's usually the vaccine is based on our best guess of which human flu is going to emerge this year. So in that regard, you may be right. However, I'd have to say the vast majority of doctors are still recommending mass immunizations for certain segments of our population. Why? Because, again, even run-of-the-mill strains of the flu will kill many individuals, usually those with weak immune systems like the elderly, like those with underlying lung diseases or chronic diseases like diabetes. Now, I know there are a lot of people who are reticent about receiving this flu shot, but nevertheless, this remains the standard option or the standard opinion of the vast majority of doctors.
Okay, but if you suspect the flu shot might not help you, why get it?
Well, that gets a little bit complicated here, so pay attention now. One of the ways that these little critters mutate is by, get this, sharing genetic information with other viruses. If a swine flu bug, which is, you know, we call it the swine flu, but it's actually a combination of swine, avian, and human flu, meets the Joe Average flu bug, you know, they might share notes, so to speak. In actuality, there are strands of replicative material like RNA, and these could be transferred from one virus to the other, giving the other virus new software, so to speak, and an opportunity to infect more hosts. I mean, this is very, very tricky, very sneaky.
Okay, so the theory here is by not taking the regular flu shot, you might be promoting the mutation of deadlier forms, and those would enter into the population?
Yeah, that's why we call you, Jim, the perfect straight man. Good summary.
Thanks, Doc. You know, I was on eBay the other week, and just out of curiosity, I heard that there was a huge market in antiviral drugs like Tamiflu and Relenza, which were being snapped up pretty quickly around the world. What are your thoughts on these two?
Well, there's a number of antiviral medications out there on the market. The Tamiflu and Relenza are two that were developed specifically for the influenza virus. You know, they have the ability to cut down on the severity of flu, but don't mistake them for a cure. Really, what they're doing is just making the situation a little bit better.
Well, besides the drug companies cashing in, the other thing that I found on the net is a long, long list of natural substances that were supposed to prevent or treat the flu. Are any of these legitimate, or are they just trying to take advantage of the scare?
Well, you know, I can't really generalize. Some are, probably most aren't. I mean, here we are, just about ready to introduce the concept of raising glutathione towards helping the problem. So you really have to look at the details. You know, let's look at some of these so-called natural strategies, like eating well and sleeping well to maintain a good immune system. I mean, how could you argue with that? But then there are things like echinacea, which are supposed to boost immune function, but the research is kind of spotty and inconsistent. There's kind of mushrooms out there that are gaining attention. There are herbs like star anise. There's a good old standby vitamin C. There's alpha lipoic acid, lysine, proline, B-complex, zinc, fish oil, and a ton of others. There's selenium, and we all know how selenium works here. It raises glutathione activity.
Okay, well, in this case, so how would somebody make an intelligent choice?
I know you're going to guess my answer, Jim. I'm a pretty predictable guy. Although I can't blame anybody for trying everything they can to stay healthy, the only thing that I can responsibly recommend to anybody is to do their homework. My decisions are based on what the research shows. And although we do need to pay attention to historical cures and cultural approaches, and as a scientist, I'm going to make my recommendations based on scientific evidence.
Oh, there you go lecturing again, Doc.
Sorry.
And you're setting me up for the next question. What does research tell us about glutathione and viral illness?
Well, everybody needs to check this out themselves. You know, go to PubMed, PubMed.com. This is really the best source of information about research articles. You get a summary on all the major articles or minor articles written worldwide. Then enter the word glutathione and any of a host of different viruses. I'm telling you, you're not going to have enough paper in your printer to print out this information. There's been studies on glutathione and AIDS and herpes and hepatitis and many more. And adequate glutathione levels are absolutely critical for a good immune response against viruses and many other pathogens. In fact, you know, things like bacteria and fungi as well.
Okay, well, tonight's topic is the flu. What about influenza?
One of the first good articles I came across was by an author called DeFlora. This was published way back in 1997. His team took a couple of hundred older people, and for 6 months, during the peak flu season, either they raised their glutathione levels or gave them a placebo. And then they followed them for the flu and for the symptoms of the flu.
Okay, what do you mean then, the flu or symptoms of the flu? What's the difference there?
That's a good question. Get this, Jim. Not everyone who catches the influenza virus will actually get symptoms or get sick. And how sick you get depends very much on your own immune system. They were measuring both the antibodies to the flu, which will tell you whether you're a carrier or not, as well as measuring the amounts and severity of symptoms. So even the ones that weren't symptomatic, they were able to pick them up.
Okay, well, did raising glutathione levels then in these people protect everybody from getting the flu?
No. Well, you know, that we're never going to see complete protection. It's kind of like if you're wearing your seatbelt, is that going to help you survive a car crash? Well, stack the odds in your favor, but it's not a complete protection. But the striking findings here was that of those who had laboratory evidence of actually carrying the flu, only a quarter of those people with the enhanced glutathione levels got very sick or developed symptoms. Only a quarter.
Okay, then what about the people who were taking the placebo?
This is remarkable. A full 80% of those developed full-blown flu symptoms.
That's pretty phenomenal. What about the glutathione group that got sick? Were they as ill as the placebo sick?
You got a very analytical mind, Jim. The group with elevated glutathione had from one-half to one-third of the symptoms. And moreover, another big difference was what we call time to recovery. The glutathione group had a significantly shorter amount of days that they had to stay in bed.
That's sounds like a pretty significant study. Any other studies that you can point us to?
Oh, yeah. There's a number. There's one from Emory University in Atlanta. This is my alma mater, called Inhibition of Influenza Infection by Glutathione. And this is a pretty self-explanatory title. This was published in the journal called Free Radical Biology and Medicine in 2003, and there's much more.
Okay, well, we don't want to get too technical, but how about giving everyone a short explanation on how raising glutathione actually works here?
Well, our immune system is, as you know, a very complex system, but there are a few things that we do actually understand. The frontline soldiers of the immune system are what we refer to as white blood cells. Now, these white blood cells are constantly swimming around our bloodstream on the alert for invaders, what we call foreign antigens, in this case, virus. When a virus enters the body, almost immediately, these white blood cells will attack this virus to try to destroy it. Because we're talking about potentially millions of viral particles, we make an attempt to make more white blood cells to even up the troops. And the white blood cells multiply over and over and over again, which requires a tremendous amount of energy, and they need an energy source.
Okay, well, having read much of Dr. Bunis's original materials, I understand that the limiting factor for the multiplication and function of these white blood cells is their ability to get glutathione.
Once again, correct. When these cells run low on glutathione, our ability to fight off infection becomes blunted, and the body can become easily overwhelmed.
Okay, then the next question is, where is the glutathione going to?
Well, it's literally being burned up by several processes. First of all, the infected tissue itself is a hot area that's attracted a lot of inflammatory agents that use up glutathione. Second, the process of multiplication we were talking about uses up a lot of oxygen, hence oxidative byproducts, free radicals, and all those other words you've heard of, which glutathione, after all, is the major antioxidant to soak up these damaging chemicals. Now, keep in mind that oxidative stress can actually promote the growth of viruses. Now, finally, white blood cells destroy the viruses using their own brand of biochemical warfare, so to speak. And much of this chemistry is involved with the secretion of powerful oxidating agents like peroxide that the white blood cell, they need protection from their own ammunition. The way they protect themselves from their own weaponry is by using glutathione.
Okay, well, over the years, I've often heard you call glutathione food or fuel for the immune system.
Yep, as long as you're supplying these immune cells with the fuel that they need to continue working properly, your ability to resist viruses or fight infection will be greatly enhanced. Pretty simple.
That is pretty simple. Let me summarize then, based on the two sources of information. One, listen to your mother, wash your hands, cover your mouth, and clean up after yourself.
Yeah.
Number two, listen to Dr. Guppen and help your immune system. Do I have it right, Doctor?
You bet, Jim.
Okay, well, Dr. Guppen, and another great call and very timely information right now, as everyone is, I think, rightfully concerned over this recent outbreak of flu around the globe. Your input and knowledge is greatly appreciated, as well as your time. Okay, we'd also like to thank everyone who's joined us tonight, taking time away from your family and friends to be with us. We certainly appreciate your participation and your desire to learn more about health and nutrition and how ImmuniCal can play a major role in that process. If you have further questions about ImmuniCal or any of the other fine ImmuniTech products, please contact the person who invited you to this call. If you need general information, please visit the ImmuniTech website. That's www.immunitech.com. And if you'd like to reach us, the quickest way to do so is via email. Our email address is medline, that's M-E-D-L-I-N-E, at immunitech.com. If you'd like to know more about Dr. Guttman's books and pamphlets or to order his latest book, Glutathione, Your Key to Health, please visit www.glutathione.org. That's glutathione.org. This officially ends our call tonight. Please join us again in a couple of weeks for the next segment of ImmuniTech's Medline. Good evening, Dr. Guttman, and good night, everyone.
Thank you, Jim.